It's time for All Things Northwest with Northwest Missouri State University President Dr. John Jasinski. Each month, Dr. Jasinski visits with community and educational leaders about exciting developments and collaborations happening throughout our region. Support for All Things Northwest comes from Family Eye Clinic in Maryville. Dr. Drew Garwood offers patients eye exams, diagnosis, and treatment of eye injuries, as well as glasses and contact lenses. I'm Patty Hawley, filling in for Northwest Missouri State University President Dr. John Jasinski. Welcome to this month's edition of All Things Northwest, a show devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. We highlight the great work and the great play, the collaboration and the developments throughout our region, and there is much to celebrate regarding Northwest Missouri, Southwest Iowa, Southeast Nebraska, and Northeast Kansas. We here at Northwest Missouri State University and KXCV-KRNW hope you remember Veterans Day on November 11th, and as Thanksgiving approaches, let us all take time to reflect on our blessings. We are most thankful for our listeners and your continued support of our radio station. I'm pleased to welcome you to the November edition of our show. We'll provide two segments this month. In segment one, we feature Ann Brock, director of the St. Joseph Symphony. In segment two, we feature Dr. Alyssa Ford, assistant professor of history at Northwest Missouri State University. Thanks for joining the All Things Northwest team, and we hope you enjoyed this month's edition. To begin, I welcome Ann Brock to All Things Northwest. Ann joined the symphony in August of 2002 as operations manager and became managing director in 2010. Her work includes musicals for Rubidoux Resident Theater and the Ice House Theater in St. Joseph, Worlds of Fun, Tiffany's Attic in Kansas City. Ann and her husband Terry perform in and manage an acoustic trio performing often in St. Joseph and throughout the Midwest, and you can hear their music on Rhythm and Roots. Ann, welcome to All Things Northwest.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
I'd like to start out with the symphony itself. Some people still think that the St. Joseph Symphony is a community symphony, but there are professionals in the orchestra. Can you tell me what the difference is?
Yes. Well, you know, the society started in 1908, and they did a lot of concerts, and like the first one was in the Tootle Mansion, so they had concerts like that. But then in 1959, it was a community orchestra. Some people got together and really got it organized and got it going. But then in the mid-80s, it evolved into a professional orchestra. They wanted to take it a step further. And so that's what it is today, is an entirely professional orchestra.
So that means that all of the musicians are actually paid. They're not volunteering their time?
That's right. They're professional musicians, and they come from Kansas City, Lawrence, Maryville. We have people come down from Maryville, just kind of all over.
The new concert series has arrived. Is that right?
Yes.
Can you tell us what the lineup is for this year's concert series?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we've got a great season this year. You know, we do four full orchestra concerts at the Missouri Theater, and then we also have the three chamber concerts. And so we've already had our first concert, which was Meet Me at the Movies, the sequel. We did Meet Me at the Movies 2 years ago, and it was such a hit. People loved it so much that we decided, they kept saying, are you going to do another one? And so we waited a year and decided to do it this year, and it went over great, too. We saw a lot of families, you know, people brought their kids, and it was a great time. And then in December, we'll have Holiday at the Ballet. And so we'll be doing a lot of your holiday favorites, you know, things that you'll recognize. And then also we have two ballet dancers coming to dance to the Nutcracker. So that's going to be something different for us, and we've had a lot of interest in that. And of course, you know, students who are taking ballet and their families are going to come to that, I think. And then March 25th, next year, we'll have a concert called A Russian Winter. And that's going to be a lot of Russian music, Russian composers. And we'll have Charles Padami, who is from Maryville and teaches here at Northwest. He'll be the featured pianist for that. So we're really looking forward to that. We haven't had him before as a soloist, so we're excited about that. And then April 29th of next year, Mastery of Mozart and Beethoven. We'll be doing Beethoven's Symphony No. 8 and Mozart's Requiem. And then we the chamber series, our first chamber concert is coming right up November 6th, and that'll be at 3 p.m. at Ashland United Methodist Church in St. Joe. And then we have also have concerts on January 15th and February 12th. And February 12th is our Valentine Chamber Concert, and we always have a really nice reception after that because it's close to Valentine's Day, so that's always popular too.
What is the difference between the concert series and the chamber series?
Well, the concert series, that we have four full orchestra concerts at the Missouri Theater, which is something to see in and of itself. You know, the theater is so beautiful. And then the chamber series features a small group of musicians from the orchestra. So we'll have anywhere from 2 to 8 people play in those concerts. Kind of gives a chance to kind of show off some of the musicians that are in the orchestra.
Why did the symphony decide to add the chamber series?
Well, when Rico came to be our conductor, it was something that he really wanted to try. He likes to play in chamber music, so he often will play in the chamber concerts. And we found out there was a taste for it in St. Joe. You know, we just tried it, and it went over really well, and it has continued to do that. And so, you know, we've just had a really good variety of musicians and repertoire for those, and it's just become an important part of our season now.
Where are those concerts?
We hold those at various churches in St. Joe, because we have some gorgeous churches up there. Ashland United Methodist Church, First Presbyterian, First Christian Church downtown. We often use those, and they're made well acoustically for the things that we're doing.
How does that affect the concert goer? What does the setting have to do with the performance?
Well, I think one thing that people like about it is that it's a little more intimate. You know, you're up close to the musicians when they're playing, and they're very just out there up front. You know, you can really hear what they're doing. You can and see their talent and appreciate it. It's just a smaller group. You just can appreciate it one-on-one, kind of.
Okay. Now, I understand that the symphony also has pre-concert lectures. Is that correct?
We do. We started a pre-concert lecture series several years ago, and we hold those at various restaurants in St. Joe. We kind of move those around to get a little taste of different places, and then Rico does the presentation for those. It's an introduction to the music that is on the upcoming program, so he'll talk about the composers and the pieces and give just interesting background on those so that it really does help to have an idea of, you know, maybe why the piece was written or what the composer was going through at the time and things like that.
Now, do you have that already lined up?
We do, yes.
Do you know when those and when and where those will be?
The information is on our website. All of that's on the website. So it would be on the Friends of the Symphony page. That our auxiliary group actually coordinates those.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The symphony has also placed emphasis on youth of the region, and you have several youth programs as well. Is that correct?
Yes, we do. We do youth concerts every year, and that's for the students in the school district as well as private schools and homeschooled children can come to those. We do 3 concerts in one day, and they bus in, you know, the kids from the school district. That's always a really fun day. We enjoy that because we have full houses, you know, on each concert, and the kids are excited, and I think the musicians get a kick out of it too, and that's been something we've done for a long time, and I think it's really important.
Why is that important?
Well, for a lot of them, it's the first time that they're exposed to symphonic music. I think they're surprised often that they recognize music. Like this year, we went ahead and did some of the movie music that we had done on the October 1st concert, and they're, you know, so excited to hear Star Wars and things like that that they recognize. And so it's just kind of a heartwarming day, you know, to see them. It's like their eyes are opened up to something new for a lot of them.
3 performances in one day must be a challenge, though.
It's a long day. It is. Yeah. Everybody knows it's going to be a marathon. You know, we have the rehearsal the night before, and then we have to be there really early the next day. But it is a long day, but it's totally worth it. You know, it's just one of those things that everybody's all in. You know, it's worth it, and we actually have fun, and we enjoy the day.
Now, are those concerts held at the Missouri Theater?
They are, yes. So they get to experience the Missouri Theater also.
What is it like to perform in an historic building like that?
Oh, gosh. You know, we love it there. It's been our home for so many years. It's an absolutely gorgeous building. I mean, it's worth coming just to see the building, you know, to have that experience. The stage is wonderful, and we have beautiful dressing rooms backstage. You know, it was an old movie palace built in 1927. It's a beautiful place, and I've sat in practically every seat in that theater, and I can see and hear every place I sit, which is really nice. You know, you don't have to tell people there's a bad seat anywhere, because there really isn't.
When can people get tickets for the concerts? I assume they're already up for sale?
They are, yes. You can purchase tickets online at our website, stjosephsymphony.org. Just give the office a call. We'll be happy to find some good seats for you. And you can also just buy them at the door on the night of the concerts.
Okay. And the Chamber Series, are tickets available for that as well?
Yes, yes. Okay. Everything for this season is all ready to go, so.
All right. Well, it sounds like an exciting season is lined up.
It is. Okay. It really is, yeah. We've had a lot of interest in this season, and we've sold a lot more season tickets this year than we did last year, too. So that's very encouraging. You know, I think we've just had a lot of interest in this particular season.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Anne, thank you very much for joining us today. We do appreciate you
coming up. Well, thank you for having me.
When we return to All Things Northwest, we'll visit with Dr. Alyssa Ford. You're listening to All Things Northwest on KXCV KRNW.
Support for KXCV KRNW comes from Atchison Holt Electric Cooperative, providing power to members in Northwest Missouri and Southwest Iowa. Atchison Holt Electric reminds you to be safe this planting season by knowing the locations of power lines and keeping farm equipment at least 10 feet away. More information is at ahec.coop. Support for KXCV KRNW comes from the Clarinda Regional Health Center. Celebrating its 75th anniversary, CRHC has been providing health care in Southwest Iowa and Northwest Missouri since 1939. More at clarindahealth.com. Support for KXCV KRNW comes from United Electric Cooperative, providing power to members in Missouri and Iowa. United Electric reminds you to be safe this planting season by knowing the location of power lines and keeping farm equipment at least 10 feet away. More information is at ueci.coop.
Welcome back to the November edition of All Things Northwest. I'm your host, Patty Holly, filling in for Dr. John Chasinski. We'll now visit with Dr. Alyssa Ford. Dr. Ford is from a small town in Texas and after high school lived and studied all across the country. She went to college in Maine, graduate school at Arizona State University in Phoenix, and a postgraduate fellowship in New Jersey, in addition to work in Cambodia and a Fulbright Award in Romania. She's published an article on pau writing, which is a specific writing technique of women in Hawaii, and has an article coming out with the Journal of Museum Education. She also is working on an article for Critical Studies in Men's Fashion, which will look at the cowboy as a gay fashion and cultural icon in the 1970s, and finishing up several articles on different aspects of the gay rodeo. Alyssa presents regularly at conferences, including at organizations like the Berkshire's Conference on Women, which is the largest conference in the world on women's history, the National Council of Public History, and the Missouri Association of Museums and Archives. Outside of the university, she belongs to the Maryville branch of the American Association of University Women and sits on the board of the Nottoway County Historical Society. Alyssa, welcome to All Things Northwest.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Tell us first about some of the changes that have gone on in the history program at Northwest Missouri State University.
So over the last year, all of the history faculty decided to go ahead and look at our history major and minor and kind of redesign those so that they better fit with the standards of the way that many places have their majors structured. So one of the biggest things that we did that everyone on campus will feel is that we had taught our U.S. survey class. It had been called America, a Historical Survey. And it was all of U.S. history jam-packed into a single semester. It was pretty crazy and pretty intense, and the students, I think, felt like it was just going at, like, bullet train speed. And so what we did is we split that into two halves. We were one of only about two or three colleges in the country that taught U.S. history that way. So by splitting it into the two halves, now it goes to 1877, so after the Civil War and Reconstruction, and then from Civil War and Reconstruction, since 1877 to the present, we're really more aligned with the rest of the country. And it also allows us as faculty to do more things in class. Before, when we had it all in one semester, we just really had to lecture a lot to get through all of the material. And now we've got time to slow down, to include other activities in class, get more student engagement, do review, just a whole array of things that we just didn't have the space for before. So that's one of the big things. And then the other things are just reorganizing some of our history major. So that will be more felt by our own majors, not everyone across campus. We kind of broadened out our classes so that it wasn't as U.S. focused. So now you really have to take a good mix of U.S. history classes, European classes, and world history classes. Before, it was just U.S. and everything else. And so we're kind of making sure that students are taking some of everything. And then we created a new research seminar. So that will be our big kind of senior capstone classes that students are taking before they graduate. Before this, it was a one-credit class that they did on their own, kind of under the advisement of an instructor. And so now we have a three-credit class that will get to have a theme that changes every year. And then we get turns taking it. So it's really exciting for us as faculty because we get to teach a class that's not in our regular schedule. And so this semester, Dr. Don Gilley taught a class on witches and vampires. Next semester, Dr. Rob Voss is teaching a class on the African American experience because we don't have any other classes that are an overview of African American history. In the fall, I'm not sure what the topic will be yet, but Dr. Devlin Schofield will be doing something with European history. And then in the spring of 2018, I'm scheduled to do it, and I'm planning to teach a class on genealogy, where students have to research their family history and then put their family history into the perspective of what's going on with state history and with national history. So I think that'll be a lot of fun for us, but then also for students, because they'll get to take these more focused classes that they don't otherwise get to take.
What led to these changes?
So we wanted to make U.S. history taught the way it's supposed to be taught with the survey class. And then we also really wanted having this research seminar is something that we really wanted to change. We wanted to move it from that one credit, self-directed senior seminar to this research seminar class so the students have that opportunity to take these more focused special topics that at larger universities or at small fancy liberal arts schools, they get to take those kinds of classes. And here it can be more difficult. And so this is giving our students that same opportunity that people at some other places like at UNL Lincoln has. But UNL is a pretty big place. You might not want to be there. So now you can take some of those more focused classes here as well.
How does the Public History and Museum Studies minor complement the history program?
So the Public History and Museum Studies minor is something that's great for history students that love history, right? There can be people who love history, but then often they think the only thing that they can do with that degree is teach, which is great if you want to teach. But there are some people who love history and really don't want to teach. And they're trying to figure out, well, what else can I do with this degree? And I always tell them, like, well, the world is kind of your oyster, right? Because you're learning critical thinking skills. You're learning how to write, how to communicate. There are so many jobs that don't say, I want this major specifically. They want someone with these skills. So you can do those things. But public history more specifically is basically doing history outside of academia or outside of teaching. So that's oral history, it's historic preservation, it's doing oral history projects. So like doing a Vietnam War veterans oral history project. That is working in museums and national parks and state parks. All of these different areas where people need a historical grounding, and then they can go and do these things by interpreting that information for the public or doing that with the public. And so that's really how the public history and museum studies minor fits in really nicely with our history degree.
What students from outside of history might be interested in that program?
Yeah, because the way I just described it makes it sound like it's just for history majors, mm-hmm. but it's not, because that's why we added the and museum studies. It had been called just public history. And over the last year, I worked to get that name changed to public history and museum studies, and that's in the catalog starting this fall. And the reason for that is because public history, a lot of times when people hear that, they don't really know what that means. And so it's not just museum studies, but that's a pretty big area. And a lot of the students that I've had, that's what they want to do. They come in saying, I want to be a museum curator. I want to work on exhibits. I want to work in a museum in some form or another. So museum studies helps give them an idea of what this degree can do. However, history students are not the only people who might want to work in a museum. You could have students in art or art history. You could have students in biology, in geology, who want to work in a natural history museum or a science center. And so this is a way of also showing students outside of history that, hey, there, if you want to work in a museum, you can have that major, right, your field major, and then have this minor to get the skills that you need to do that job.
Can you talk about some of the hands-on training that students receive as part of this minor degree?
That's one of the things that I'm really proud of with our Public History and Museum Studies minor, is that we have a great facility on campus for students to use. And we have a public history lab. And the first year that I was here, the second year that I was here, in 2012, someone donated to us a very large dry mount press. And then we were able to buy a smaller dry mount press. We have purchased a large printer. And so these are things that the students are using to create their exhibits, their displays. And they're doing it in a professional way, because a dry mount press is a way that you're using this kind of dry glue sheet and you're permanently adhering what you've printed out to this foam board. And this is stuff that many museums do not have. They have to take this, they have to hire someone out or send it out to be done. I was at a museum of the St. Joseph Museum Association. And so this includes museums from St. Joe and Andrew County. Probably at least 10 different sites were represented. And when I said that I had one of these, everyone in the room went, oh my goodness, I'm so jealous. Can you do this for us? Can you do that for us? Like they couldn't believe that we had this. And so it's something that museums are jealous of, but it's also something that in graduate school, even if you go into a public history or museum studies graduate program, you probably won't get the same type of hands-on experience that you get to have here, which is incredible that you get this as an undergraduate and as a minor degree program. So it's really fantastic and sets us apart from most other public history or museum studies programs in the area or even the country.
So have they used that in displays around the area?
Yes. So every alternate falls, so this fall and then other falls alternately, my students do a big exhibit project. They research, they design, they install an exhibit or series of exhibits. So last time I did the class in the fall, they did a series of exhibits about rural life in Nottoway County, and that was put up at the Nottoway County Historical Society. This fall, they are doing an exhibit on military history. So they're redesigning the military history exhibit at the museum, which they have this phenomenal amount of uniforms, but there's not really signage. And so that's what they're working on, and they've taken different parts of this. And then we're learning how to, you know, write labels. We're learning how to use Wix to create websites. We're learning how to use just a whole array of different skills. And then they'll end up printing them out on our big printer. We'll use the dry mount press. We'll put it all together, and we'll install it at the museum. And what's really exciting about this is the opening day of that exhibit is the 75th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. So it'll be on December 7th, not 1941, that's when Pearl Harbor was, but it'll be on December 7th of 2016. And one of the students is focusing on Pearl Harbor in his exhibit. So that'll be, I think that'll be really great for the students to get that experience, but then also for the public to come in on that day and be able to celebrate that anniversary and then kind of the military involvement of Nottoway County more broadly.
And that is at the Nottoway County Historical Museum?
Yes, it's at the Nottoway County Historical Society's Museum there on Walnut.
Okay. What have students gone on to do after graduation that have had this experience?
So we've had students that have gone to work in a few museums. Now, coming straight out of undergraduate, it is hard to get in with like that fantastic high-level museum position. You really need a master's degree. But I've had someone who's worked at part-time, worked down in a town right outside of Joplin. I cannot remember the name of it right now, at their local historical society. We had a few people who did graduate with their undergrads here and then master's degrees, and one of them is the registrar at the St. Joseph Museums down in St. Joe, and then someone is the director of, I think it's called the USS Batfish, so it is a military submarine museum in Oklahoma, of all places. And then I've got a variety of students that are in graduate school right now. So there's people who are studying museum management, public history, museums, curators in everywhere from Minnesota to Illinois out to North Carolina.
What has the program been doing to reach out to students both on campus and off campus?
So we're trying to get the word out, at least for the Public History Museum Studies part. I can answer this in two ways. So for Public History and Museum Studies, we've been trying to make sure that, first of all, people on campus know that it's not just public history, it's and museum studies, so that they're able to tell their students, like, oh, you want to work in a museum, you need to go talk with this person, and you need to go get information about this program that's pertinent to you. I also have a meeting in a couple of weeks with people at Mabel Cook to figure out how to better get this information out to students who are applying. So if there's a student who's coming in and saying, you know, I'm really interested in museums, well, they first get directed to me to talk about that. But then when they go and have their campus tour, when they're over at the library, they talk with Jessica Vest, who's the archivist, and she can take them back into the archive. She can show them all of this stuff that might really get them further excited about what they can do here and the internships they can do here. And then I've also worked with a student doing an internship to create kind of like a museum in a box idea, exhibit in a box, pulling on different sensational murders that have happened in Nottoway County. So a couple of years ago, a student did an exhibit at the museum about this, and I thought, well, this would be fun in a classroom. And so we've got pulled articles, newspaper articles from when these murders were. We've got photographs. We've got objects, all kinds of things. Not the actual objects, lists of the objects. And then what I plan to do is take this into a high school class and say, okay, crime in Nottoway County. Here's some murders. Here's the things that the museum has. How would you present this? How would you make an exhibit about this? So that they're learning, well, what do we use? What do we not use? Maybe that object is something that, while it's fascinating, is perhaps inappropriate to put on display. How do we talk about something that's really difficult, right? How do you talk about murder that's kind of grisly? How do you talk about murders when some of those people are still alive and it's contentious? How do we do this in a public way? So that it'll kind of get them excited about history, local history, history more broadly, and then also thinking about the types of things that they can do with a history degree. So that's just one example of what I've been doing, but we've got a number of people in our department who've been going out to schools and talking with them. Rob Voss goes every year and does a program about the Titanic with the middle school here in town. Matt Johnson has gone multiple times to North Nottoway to talk with elementary school classes about the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, the Revolution. So kind of, it's never too young to get people excited about history and excited about Northwest as a place where you can do these things.
Are you seeing more people interested in this program?
Well, it all just started, so it's hard to say that yet. But the students that I've talked to, when I say it that it's public history and museum studies, they immediately understand it better, and they really like that title better. So I think it's good for them, and I think it'll also be helpful when they're looking into some graduate programs and jobs, because their degree will now say public history and museum studies. So it's really clear what they've got. I'll have to come back in a few years and report to you about what the increase is. I hope that there will be an increase.
Talk about some of the history you find locally and regionally.
Okay. So this has been so fascinating because I'm not from here, so I don't really know this history. I am from Texas, and even though I've been here for, this is my sixth year, when I hear these town names around here, I still don't quite know where all of the little ones are versus Texas. I instantly know what you're talking about. And so the local history, I'm still learning. And so I'm actually on the board at the Nottoway County Historical Society, and that's been great because I get to know more of it just by going to board meetings and interacting with people at the museum. But the local history class, local history practicum that the students do is fascinating because I get to learn alongside them. I'm not teaching them this local history stuff. I'm teaching them how to present it, but I don't know the local history. And so, for instance, one student, Aaron Schmidt, who does history and geography, is looking at the Civil War in Nottoway County. And that has just been, I mean, incredibly fascinating because this place was, it was a disaster during the Civil War. And then he goes through and looks at the collections of the museum and he says, oh my God, like here's someone's discharge papers from the Civil War. Like sitting over there is a diary that someone like wrote down some of this stuff about the Civil War. And over there are emancipation papers. It's been great for me, but it's also been great for the students because for many of them, it's the first time that they're diving into the actual archives. They get to touch the documents, and they're learning about this place where they're living, many of them for 4 years. I mean, they're not from here, but I think it's so important to actually learn about this place where you're living, and it makes it more interesting. You're getting out of that campus bubble, and you're actually interacting with Maryville as a community.
It sounds like it's bringing history to life for these students.
I think it 100% is, right? In this exhibit, when they're going in and they're looking at the pins and patches of what this insignia means on these military uniforms, well, they're having to learn about the history of the person who wore that uniform and learn about their story. And that all of a sudden, like a patch insignia, well, maybe on its own, that's not that interesting. But when you're learning about the person that that pertained to, that makes it so much more interesting for you. And when you know that it's something that it was people right here, right? When you know that after Pearl Harbor, when that happened, the quarterback of the football team signed up for the war, inspired by Pearl Harbor. I mean, that's something that pertains to Maryville and it pertains to Northwest, that this place was a part of these wars also.
What would you like to see happen with this program? And maybe you're already seeing it happen.
Well, I would really like to see students from other areas join the program. We had one student who graduated last year who was from art, and she brought a really different perspective. And so I think having students that are from different areas would be fascinating, and they could all learn from each other when they're trying to do these exhibits, right? Even though the topic of the exhibits might be more history focused, but they're all still learning the same skills that they need and how to create that. But then they can see how these different areas come at it. Peter Adam in biology actually offers my students the opportunity to go over and sit in on his class when they are mounting animals. And I tell my students this, and they're kind of like, oh, horrified, right? They're history students. They're like, wait, I could skin a mouse and mount it, or a bat? Ah! But it's showing that, well, this is all the type of stuff that can happen in museums, right? It might not be what you're doing in the one you're interested in, but guess what? If you work in a museum, there's probably going to be some weird mounted animal there. And now you're going to understand how it got to be there and how that happened. So I'd like to see some of that, like, cross-fertilization happen.
It sounds like an exciting program.
I think so. Hopefully that will continue to be the case.
All right. Well, Alyssa, thank you very much for joining us. We do appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And that's a wrap for this month's show. All Things Northwest is a program devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. We thank our guests, Director of the St. Joseph Symphony, Ann Brock, and Assistant Professor of History at Northwest Missouri State University, Dr. Alyssa Ford. Thanks, too, to our producer, Kayla Morgan, a student here at Northwest Missouri State University, along with KXCV-KRNW station manager, Rodney Harris. Take good care and keep celebrating and advancing our region. I'm Patty Hawley. Thanks for your support of All Things Northwest, KXCV-KRNW, and Public Radio. Support for All Things Northwest comes from Family Eye Clinic. More information is available online at familyeyeclinic.net or at 660-582-5222. Theme music for the program was composed by Northwest professor Dr. William Richardson. The music was recorded by vocal music education major Jordan Andrews, piano, music major Daniel Bates, bass, audio and production major Mark Ludwig, drums, and Dr. William Richardson, trumpet. The program is produced by broadcast production major Kayla Morgan. Join us again next month for All Things Northwest.